Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, inching towards viral and roaring towards being overly caffeinated. This is your weekly YouTube show all about Notre Dame football and a fan base getting hit with a tsunami of off-season news. I'm Eric Hansen, enjoying this warmer weather portal here in South Bend. He's Tyler James, wondering if it's going to be cold enough to continue to wear ugly Christmas sweaters. Together, we are the content creating, words out avoiding guys at BlueGold.com. On tonight's show, we're going to look at Notre Dame coach Marcus Freeman's future at Notre Dame in light of the NFL interest. We'll look at the end of the Notre Dame USC series, or at least a significant pause in it, what Notre Dame's doing to plug the gap in the meantime. We've got transfer portal news, we've got NFL draft decisions, recruiting, college football takes, and of course your questions and our answers. So fill up the queue. This is Football Never Sleeps.
All right. We appreciate everyone joining us here on Monday night. There will be no interruptions to the Football Never Sleeps schedule. We will keep on going on our weekly mission. We appreciate you guys joining us. Scott, Jeff, Donald. We appreciate all these live chatters who join us on every week. And even if you're only here every once in a while, that's totally fine too. We appreciate you. Whether you're watching us live or on replay, please make sure that you're subscribed to here to us here on the channel. And make sure you hit the like button on this video as well. BlueAndGold.com continues to be one of the top sites on the On3 network in terms of gaining new subscribers in December. So the 50% off deal is still alive for folks who want to subscribe to BlueAndGold.com. New subscribers can sign up for the first year of an annual subscription for just $59.99. You can use the link in our video description or head over to BlueAndGold.com, hit the join button. My pinned tweet over on Twitter is the subscription deal. So if you still haven't decided to make the leap yet, we're giving you a pretty good opportunity to do so. And there's plenty to discuss, which we'll get into tonight on Football Never Sleeps, but it's always happening, not just on Monday nights over on the Loose Emoji Board, where we're talking to our subscribers and keeping them updated on everything going on.
And get yourself the gift you want for Christmas. Get a subscription to Blue and Gold. I always get something from my grandkids because they don't have a very big budget. And that's what I would get from myself if I didn't already have it.
Jeff asked for the sweater. It says Merry Elfin Christmas. So it is clean, though it's implied not clean. So that's my last Christmas sweater for the Football Never Sleeps season. But we'll be wearing plenty throughout the week. I like a good Christmas sweater, especially one that's maybe more silly than serious, but ugly nonetheless. First, we will get started tonight with more Marcus Freeman speculation, the latest in a seemingly unending wave of speculation regarding Notre Dame head coach Marcus Freeman and the New York Giants surfaced Sunday from NFL Network's Mike Garofalo. I put that in phonetics and everything and still stumbled over it, but
I would have said Garofalo. So you definitely got the right pronunciation, I guess.
Yeah. Mike Garofalo. Let me do that better the second time. Apologies. The direct quote he said was, "I expect him to be foremost among the college candidates for the Giants job." That was his report. Not necessarily earth shattering news. But still nonetheless, it's news that keeps coming up. How much interest the Giants have in Freeman and how much interest Freeman has in the Giants largely remains a mystery, but Eric has done some work on finding out what's going on here. So first, Eric, let's start here. Is there a point where Notre Dame fans should start to worry about these reports?
I wouldn't start to worry about the reports unless you saw Marcus being named the coach of the team. I did an intel piece today. And I'm not saying it's not, there's no chance that it happens, but I don't see momentum for it. And I have a lot of reasons to believe that. I think Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman will get things done. But I will say this, I think the Giants' interest is real. I think Marcus's need to know what he's pushing aside is real. I think you need to look at that. You and I have both in our careers had people approach us. And as happy as we were at the South Bend Tribune at the time, we usually at least took a look at those so we knew that we're making a really good decision about our own future. And I think that's what Marcus owes himself is he doesn't necessarily, like Brian Kelly was way more curious about the NFL when he went through his investigation with the Eagles after the 2012 season. I wouldn't say these situations are parallel at all. For Marcus, it's just his philosophy is question everything. Well, he's going to question this and look at it. And I think eventually he will be Notre Dame's football coach. And I think the real key point here, Tyler, is he doesn't, and I know Notre Dame doesn't, they don't want this to be an annual thing. Will he go? Will he stay? Will he go? Will he stay? Which is kind of like it is with Kiffin. And I think if Marcus ends up staying with Notre Dame, they'll work out something long term so that this isn't an annual pilgrimage of let's have all these rumors and have everybody asking about it, including recruits.
Yeah, I come from it from a perspective of someone who watches a lot of NFL football. And so just like if we have folks that are watching that don't engage in the NFL coaching carousel and those kinds of things, I figured I could offer that perspective. I would say like if a Notre Dame deal isn't announced before the end of the NFL season, then maybe it's time to worry about this a little bit more. The NFL has two more weeks of games. January 4th would be the last day of games in the NFL regular season. And not long after that is when the coaching cycle really starts to get rolling. So there's still time for this to get hashed out between Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman and it to have not been that big of a concern. I know just because Notre Dame isn't playing, Marcus Freeman isn't doing daily interviews, it feels a lot longer for Notre Dame fans. So I understand that. But as I sit and watch the latest reports, like the story hasn't been advanced much at all in the weeks that Marcus Freeman and potential interest from the Giants has been first discussed. That it's much of the same discussion that continues to happen. Now, if there's a report that Marcus Freeman has actually interviewed, then I think that's a little bit more interesting. Based off the way you were speaking, would even an interview raise your eyebrow much, Eric?
It would raise my eyebrow. It wouldn't set a five alarm fire signal out or the bat signal. That would be really taking this all to another level. I think Marcus can do this without interviewing. I mean, it's not like he's looking for interviewing experience. But again, he's not a guy that just makes a really, really quick decision. And one of the things I mentioned in the story was when Brian Kelly hired him from Cincinnati to be the Notre Dame defensive coordinator for the 2021 season, he had two pretty good offers on the table. LSU was very interested in Marcus as well. And they took a week to think about it. And them meaning Marcus Freeman and his wife, Joanna, and their kids. I mean, they talked to their kids about it too. And this is really a family decision. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. And you had a story today on blueandgold.com. So I want to encourage folks that are subscribers over there to go check that out. So there's more details there. I don't want to give everything away that you wrote there, but I'm from the contract extension part of things. What do you believe gets things to the finish line for Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman
in terms of number of years
or in terms of anything? What do you think is the
I would say the secret sauce here, Tyler, to getting the deal done is guaranteed years. I mean, because Marcus wants it to be a two-way commitment so that he's committing to a longer term. So I think if you say the 2027 people that are being recruited now will not have to worry about whether they're going to play for a different coach, I would say that would be kind of a safe timeline. Okay. And then the other thing is taking care of the assistants. You know, right now, assistant coaches' salaries are really skyrocketing, and as we've seen. And I think when Mike Denbrock, just 2 years ago, came to Notre Dame, I believe he was the highest paid offensive coordinator in football. And those salaries continue to escalate. So will Notre Dame continue to give Marcus the resources to keep the core assistants? You can't keep everybody every year, but if you can keep your core together, And we saw the consequences of changing defensive coordinators. You know, Al Golden had a great opportunity, and there was a little bit of a, you know, breaking in period with Chris Ash. And if you had had Al Golden 4.0 this year, would Notre Dame be in the playoff, for instance? I think Chris Ash did a tremendous job, but it took a while for Notre Dame. You know, if you have so much coaching turnover every year, I think those are the two things that are most important to Marcus.
All right. I wanted to give some shout outs to these, the more or less comments than questions. Irish fans, for a team not involved in the postseason, you guys still have a lot to cover, right? Thanks for all your great work. More power to you both. Irish fan 44. We appreciate you. Yeah. It's not necessarily a boring time for us. We're keeping plenty busy. And we'll make sure to find some time to take off for the holiday this week, but still plenty to go. And Donald said, Merry Christmas, Tyler, Erica. I wanted to say Merry Christmas back to you, Donald, and happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everyone else tuning in. We appreciate you guys.
Merry Christmas. And I want to give a shout out. I don't know if he's in the chat, but I have a new friend, Andrew McCory, who I went out and had lunch with Andrew and his brothers.
Oh, yeah. That's who I passed the note on from, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we had a blast talking ND football. We were probably there an hour and a half or 2 hours. And
that's cool.
We saw Sarah Maselli there and just had a really good time. So I want to say hi to Andrew, who's in town for Christmas and a big Notre Dame fan.
Awesome. Well, let's get into the actual news of today, and that is Notre Dame and USC not continuing its annual series in 2026. Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports broke the news today that USC and Notre Dame failed to come to an agreement to continue the annual series in 2026. Soon after that report, Notre Dame announced a scheduled home-and-home series for 2026 and 2027 with BYU. Let's focus on the USC rivalry aspect of this news first. These are what I think were the key details from Dellinger's reporting. He wrote, the two programs were on the verge of finalizing a two-year extension of their agreement in late November, with USC agreeing to host Notre Dame next season on the traditional date after Thanksgiving and the Irish hosting in 2027. However, USC officials determined that the game date was not ideal considering past decisions from the CFP selection committee in punishing schools for losses, especially those late in the season. The latest discussions between Trojans athletic director Jen Cohen and Notre Dame athletic director Pete Pavakwa centered around a possible game next year on week zero, though that did not materialize. The two administrators have agreed to work to restart the series as soon as 2030. Those with knowledge of their talks told Yahoo Sports. We at Blue and Gold received a joint statement from Notre Dame and USC that said, in quote, USC and Notre Dame recognize how special our rivalry is to our fans, our teams, and college football, and our institutions will continue working towards bringing back the battle for the jeweled shillelagh. The rivalry between our two schools is one of the best in all of sport, and we look forward to meeting again in the future. So now that we have that all the way, Eric, what was your reaction to the news?
Not as big as the reaction to Beef Eater Super Chat there, but my reaction is nice. The jeweled shillelagh. Well, go ahead and read that first, and then I'll...
Yeah, Beef Eater, Merry Christmas, gents. Beer's on me. Thank you for keeping us sane in this crazy time. Thanks a lot, Beef Eater. We appreciate the Super Chat.
And Beef Eater's an awesome guy. I got a chance to meet him in person this season and his son, Mikey, and we had a real nice time talking Notre Dame football. He's an awesome guy.
Awesome. I don't know where you find all the time.
You know what? I for people like Beef Eater, I make the time. It's I don't know where I find it either, but I think my grandkids have so many sports. They're not tugging on me as much. My reaction is, oh my God, the jeweled shillelagh. That's the most important piece of this. It's like, if you had asked, I don't even remember ever mentioning that in any of my stories. And I've been writing about Notre Dame USC for decades. It was the first Notre Dame game I ever covered was in 1983. Notre Dame USC. I wasn't a Notre Dame beat writer at the time, but Blair Keel was on the team. He was from Columbus, Indiana, which is the little town at the newspaper where I worked. And I went up there to cover Blair Keel getting benched in the USC game. And to me, Tyler, on a serious note, it's, you know, there's a lot of new stuff about college football, and people gave us gloom and doom that you know, college football isn't going to be the same, and it's going to turn off the interest. And so far it hasn't turned off the interest, but it's eroded some pretty cool things, the new structure. And I think this is one of them. I think Notre Dame USC is a fabric of college football, and it needs to be restored. And the fact that they couldn't do it is alarming. And I understand, I guess you want to be more specific, but I understand based on how the college football playoff committee is doing things, are you really rewarding teams for playing series like this? The perception kind of is that you're not. And so why would teams do that? But I know we're going to get into it more. You wanted an initial reaction. You got a book. So let's hear your shortened version of the novel.
Yeah, no worries. I
know you wrote a column.
Yeah, I wrote a column today, and sort of the takeaway was that I think it's just a shame. Like, I think history and tradition is being trampled for jockeying to get into the college football playoff. And I think rivalries like this should be bigger than that. I wrote a maybe even more pointed column back in August, more pointed at USC specifically, that I just feel like, yes, maybe can USC get in the playoff more easily if it takes Notre Dame off its schedule. But if USC can't beat Notre Dame, it's not winning a national championship. Like, I just don't, like, it doesn't make sense to me that USC is going to get to a point where it can win a national championship by taking the teams that it needs to beat off of its schedule. I think that's disappointing to me. And this, I mean, this isn't the first rivalry that something like this has happened to. But sort of like you mentioned, there is at least some evidence that suggests that USC could be better off for not playing Notre Dame on an annual basis. And I think that speaks poorly to the current college football climate. So I guess, how much blame do you put on USC? How much blame do you put on college football? How much blame do you put on Notre Dame? What are your thoughts on all that?
I don't put much blame on Notre Dame because I thought Pete Bavakwa played hardball. I think he tried to make it difficult for USC to not play this. And I think he was willing to look at different dates and different parts of the calendar. And so I give Pete Bavakwa a lot of credit. From USC's standpoint, I do blame them. And yet I understand some of the blame that I'm giving them in what we just talked about, in the structure of our team's going to be rewarded for playing this caliber of non-conference opposition. Why play Notre Dame when you can play Auburn and go for it on fourth down and beat a crappy Auburn team and make the playoff doing that? So I can understand that part of it. The thing about it is there are teams that have handled playing in the Eastern and Central time zones way better than USC has. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of USC's fault for not having a better lean into sports science and being more prepared for those road trips, because it's not just them against Notre Dame. They haven't really played well again. Even the Nebraska game was a struggle. The Purdue game wasn't a blowout. And then they've lost all the other games in the Eastern time zone. Last year, they lost to Minnesota in the Eastern and Central time zone. So that's maybe where I blame USC, is that, you know, you make a few of those trips a year, you better learn how to be good at it.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing if USC had fared better against Notre Dame in the past 15 years, or I think it's 4-11 USC is against Notre Dame, like, that this probably isn't what happens. Like, I think part of it is because Notre Dame has been clearly the better program between the two. And that's put USC in a bad position. I've sort of jokingly compared, or said, USC just really wants to be Indiana. And now, like, obviously being Indiana is a pretty good thing right now, but it's like, that's where they're like, hey, this is what Indiana's doing. Why shouldn't we do this? Why don't we play a terrible non-conference schedule and let's just try to get through the Big Ten? And that's what it's worked for IU. How long can IU sustain that? We'll see. It seems to me that a program with the tradition and history of USC shouldn't be looking to IU for its football model, but that seems to be where it's headed and what the college football playoff is rewarding right now. I think I would say Indiana has a better football coach than USC right now too.
I would agree.
Pretty confident in.
and so, better coordinators.
The only blame I have question about as it relates to Notre Dame in that report from Ross was that there were discussions about playing in week zero next year. It didn't blame either side in terms of why that didn't materialize. But if Notre Dame said no, then Notre Dame deserves blame for that too. Like if Notre Dame didn't want to play week zero, then that's on Notre Dame played a role in this not happening as well. I understand Notre Dame could say we want the game to stay the way it is. And sure, I tend to agree with that, but I think you if there are people saying we'll play him anytime, anywhere, including Marcus Freeman. And if you balked at that, then you have to at least take a little bit of the blame.
You know, it's ironic if they had played USC week zero, it looked like they joined the Big Ten. USC, Wisconsin, Purdue, Michigan State, all at the front end of the schedule.
Yeah. Obviously Notre Dame's got a pretty interesting season opener next year regardless. So that's what Notre Dame will do. What do you think in terms of the other end of this? What do you think of BYU as a replacement for the next two seasons?
For a quick pivot, I like it. And I think you're going to, I think the answer is scheduling home and home series, not having a big, long commitment like 10 years or forever or whatever with somebody else. I think the smart answer was doing a home and home. And I think BYU is worth it. And I think, especially we don't know the dates of those games yet. But if you have at least one of those, if not both of those in November, I think that's really good for Notre Dame to be able to get a Power Four conference opponent in November that's not an ACC team, I think is a positive for Notre Dame's schedule. And even if it's, you know, a different time of year, I like the fact that I think BYU brings value to the schedule. And we know that, you know, it's not so far out in the distance that BYU could be in a real dip. We know Bear Bachmeyer is going to be the quarterback next year. And that, you know, Kalani Sitake is a really, really good football coach. And I like it, but I mean, it doesn't bring the same stuff that USC did, but I thought for a quick pivot, that was good. How about you? What'd you think about BYU?
Yeah. I want to throw this comment in here from Rajon first. If I got my nails painted today, guess what it would say? And we'll go without answering that, but I thought that was pretty funny.
You know what, Rajon? Wait a second. Rajon, if you can get your nails painted, I will pay for it. You send me the picture. We'll show it on A Football Never Sleeps.
Send you the invoice.
Send me the invoice and I will pay for it and a free pedicure. You can throw that in. I'll pay for it.
All right. What other show's offering free manicures and pedicures? No one. It's a Football Never Sleeps exclusive. That was a good one, Rajon. Yeah, okay. Back to BYU. I think it's a pretty good matchup. I think BYU is certainly gaining respect for the program with Kalani Sitake as head coach. I'd much rather Notre Dame play BYU in a regular season matchup than the Pop-Tarts Bowl. So I think this makes everyone happy. BYU's been pretty angry that Notre Dame didn't fulfill its original agreement to go out to BYU when the last time the two teams had a series and the compromise was playing in Las Vegas. So BYU fans who have been annoyed by that, I'm sure will be showing up to be loud when Notre Dame heads out there next season. But yeah, it's a good team. It's hard to ask for much, but obviously there's bigger programs for Notre Dame to schedule games with, but on a short notice and to sort of soften the blow of losing a USC team who, even though, yeah, we are making fun of a little bit, like they're usually going to be in the top 25 and you would expect that to be one of your potentially better wins next season, to replace that with BYU, I think is important.
And BYU finished higher in the rankings than USC did this year.
Yeah, and just one spot below Notre Dame at number 12. Do you have any concern for Notre Dame's schedule ability moving forward? I think you alluded to that a little bit when you talked about like the path forward for Notre Dame is probably the shorter term agreements rather than the longer term agreements. Do you think there's a greater concern moving forward for Notre Dame?
Yes and no. Here's my yes part. November. Outside of the ACC, for just getting people to line up to do home and homes, I think there's a waiting list. And I got that vibe from Pete Bavak when he said as much on the record and he said as much off the record. So I don't think there's any concern. It's just having the octane in your schedule in November, when other teams are playing big games, if you're just blowing out Syracuse by 63 points, is that enough? Is playing somebody like BYU and winning by 7 more valuable than beating a team by 63 points? And the ACC quality from top to bottom isn't what it used to be. You know, there are some good teams in the ACC, not as many of them, but they are willing to schedule games against home and away against Notre Dame in November. And I think that's where the challenge for Pete Bavakwa is getting these power conference teams to play in November. That's my concern, but not overall scheduling.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I just worry about like how many teams can you fit into your schedule in a place that they want to play. The number of teams that you can get to play you in September is probably a lot higher than in November. And then you're probably leaning on Navy and Group of Six teams for your November schedule, and that's not and ACC. You're going to get some ACC teams to play you in November. Probably that's not going to change, but I'm just curious in terms of moving forward. There's been some of these teams, and I think there was a question from someone in here about if Notre Dame will start from Scott Feagan, is there a chance Notre Dame will start filling its schedule with SEC and Big Ten teams, maybe start up Texas and Michigan, even a series with LSU or Indiana? I think like those series are possible, but there's also a lot of series that have been scheduled previously. And I'm curious how much of those stay. They are mostly in September, so I would imagine they stay. Like Texas is on the schedule in 2028.
Alabama's coming up.
Yeah, Alabama.
Auburn just got scheduled.
Auburn. There's a Florida one in the distance. They're planning to play Clemson a lot coming up. I think it was a 12-year agreement off the top of my head. So there is a lot on the schedule. And maybe Clemson helps fill the November void too. Like maybe Clemson's okay with playing in November once every 2 years if it comes to Notre Dame.
Yeah, and they have played in November. You think about some of the big Clemson games have been in November.
Yeah, so maybe that makes that a little bit easier too, especially if you know you're going to play Clemson every year. So Notre Dame, I think, has its hands full. It's not. I think it's not an enviable position that Notre Dame is in terms of trying to fill out its schedule. I think it's going to require a lot of work, but I think there's still a pathway here for Notre Dame, and that's why this ACC agreement is in place to help them out with that. Because if that didn't exist, I think Notre Dame would be in a much more difficult situation.
And we've got all the opponents, I believe, for the 2026 schedule. Now it's just about filling in which dates some of those are going to play. So hopefully you can start making plans.
Yeah,
and we can too.
All right. Let's get into some more questions here. Joe Peter says, I think Marcus Freeman stays. Replacement plan in place. Mike Bickens, Signetti, what do you think a backup plan looks like? Ash named interim.
I think if Marcus did leave, and in this time frame, I think it would be Mike Denbrock. I think he would be the head coach.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
if you were looking for somebody longer term, you know, Kyle Kelly asked me, our colleague Kyle Kelly asked me kind of randomly, I think we were just talking on the phone, and I hadn't really thought of it at the time because my mind doesn't like use those resources unless I think it's something's moving toward reality. But off the top of my head, Clark Lee was the first name that I came up with.
Yeah,
as an outside candidate, and I think he would be really good. It'd be a different dynamic, but I think Clark Lee would be very good.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Mike Denbrock would make sense in terms of his experience and to keep things steady. I don't think it would be seen as like, oh my gosh, Notre Dame went and got him, obviously just because he's here. And it's just so late, and it would become so late in the cycle that you don't know what you can get. And the prices have already been driven up so much because so many of these other programs have gone through the cycle and given their coaches raises or hired new coaches. And so you're going to be paying a pretty penny if Marcus Freeman leaves. And so I think that's part of the reason why you're willing to pay sort of Marcus Freeman whatever he wants. Like, I think Notre Dame's in the position, and Pete Bavaco almost said as much, that whatever he needs, we want to make sure that he knows he has it at Notre Dame. And so I think I don't see, like, if we're talking about an interim, Denbrock makes more sense than a Chris Ash in terms of what Joe Peters suggested here. Signetti, I think that would be difficult to see him leave Indiana with the way he has things trending right now. I know that seems crazy to say that the Indiana coach wouldn't leave for Notre Dame, but that would be an interesting one. And yeah, Clark Lee is sort of the first name that comes to mind in terms of someone that has had Notre Dame experience and is experiencing success at his current job as well.
Yeah, I don't know the ins and outs of Signetti's contract, but the last extension, it felt like it was something that was heavy to leave for either side. It was heavy to fire him,
right,
and not have a big tab to pay, or it would be really difficult, big buyout for him to leave Indiana at this point.
Another one from Joe, less serious. Eric nailing the intro. Eric, how much have you practiced the intro? Well done. Merry Christmas to you and Tyler. You guys are top notch.
I practice it maybe 10 minutes before we go on the air. I just try to go through Tyler's script and figure out what we're talking about and then read through it once and then memorize it and then just go do it. Just be me. And then if I stumble over it, I own it.
he's much better at it than me. That's why I said, Eric, if we're doing this song, you're doing the intro. Because I don't think I could do that. I struggle enough without having to deal with the music playing with our podcast.
Yeah, I'm just glad I don't have to do the singing part of it. So,
Beef Eater said, what about the Western Michigan staff? And obviously Lance Taylor as the head coach there is having success. I think that would be a bit of a stretch in terms of becoming Notre Dame's next head coach, but Lance Taylor is certainly building a strong resume for himself.
Yeah, he's building a strong resume, and I know that Beef Eater knows that Greer Martini is on the staff there at Western Michigan, a linebackers coach.
Sure.
Who's coming up. But that's a real upcoming staff. That's a staff to look at down the road for a lot of teams.
Yeah, Chris O'Leary, defensive coordinator too, with former Notre Dame safeties coach. So a lot of Notre Dame ties there. I think Nick Coleman is on that staff as well. Former wow. Notre Dame cornerback. I could be incorrect there, but I'm pretty sure he's on that staff as well. All right, one more question here from Jeff Stevens. And Dan Patrick has reported a revised CFP selection process for next year where the larger conference champions get a spot and the next eight are at large with Notre Dame in, if at least, number 12. Thoughts?
So I watched the same report as you did. So, he talked about he didn't think it was going to get to 16 next year. He thought it was going to be 12 or 14, that Notre Dame would have assurances if they were either, you know, whatever the bottom team was, whether it was 12 or 14, they would get in. But the power conferences would be assured a spot. So in that new configuration, Duke would be in. And so you wouldn't have two group of five teams. The group of five would still have a spot. So it would be. Oh, I disappeared for a second. I don't know what was going on there.
You're all right. We still got you.
Okay. A 5-7 or a 5-9. You know, if they went to 16 teams, which is what Pete Bavacqua, then it's 5-11 with no guarantees like Tony Petitti wanted for the Big Ten for certain things. But I think that's good. The thing that's interesting to me, too, is that I have a lot of friends and family that are not Notre Dame fans. They're not Notre Dame haters either. They just live in Ohio. And they are so curious about it.
is a funny way to caveat that.
Yeah, they just live in Ohio, so there's scarlet and gray decor in their homes. I mean, there's like scarlet and gray rooms. I stayed overnight at one of their houses in one of their kids' rooms a few years ago, and it was pitch dark when I woke. You know, when I went to sleep, when I woke up, I thought I died and was in Woody Hayes heaven. Everything in the room was scarlet or gray. So, but and right, it didn't. Anyways, yeah. Where was I with this? They wanted to know about. They thought Notre Dame was being treated special, and really, if your conference champion is being also guaranteed with this memorandum of understanding, then they also have, I mean, there's no way Duke should be in any playoff field unless it's 64 teams. I mean, a five loss team just doesn't belong in the playoff. I don't care who your losses are to, and they lost to Tulane. So, but yeah, that was a good report by Dan Patrick, and I'm encouraged, but I don't think they're going to get to 16 by next year. I think they're going to at the most 14 and probably 12. And I do like the tweaks to it.
Yeah,
I'd blame Tyler for getting me off on that tangent.
No. You did good. I'm sorry. It was just a funny way to describe it, even though I knew what you meant. But it was just a funny caveat. Next question from Jeff was: any news on the Notre Dame linebackers coach?
I don't think it's a huge hurry to get that done, and there's some different ways that they can go about filling that spot. You know, they could move a coach around and hire a defensive line coach, for example. And they could hire a linebackers coach. But I think, you know, once Marcus's situation gets, I mean, it seems like, you know, you're fixing the toaster when the house is on fire, get the fire out and then fix the toaster. So I think, you know, getting Marcus close to the finish line or at the finish line is, more important than getting the linebackers coach, but I think they'll get somebody really good, whichever position they decide to fill.
Yeah. I think it would be harder for the linebackers coach to accept the job if it didn't know for sure if Marcus Freeman is going to be their head coach. So they got to get that fully taken care of first.
Honey, we're moving. Honey, we're moving again.
All right. I wanted to talk a little bit about NFL draft decisions in the last week. Three Notre Dame players announced early exits to enter the NFL draft: running backs Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, and offensive tackle Amiel Wagner. Did any of those decisions surprise you?
No, they didn't. I thought Jadarian Price had a shred of surprise in him just because he's such a different guy in terms of what he values in his life. But to me, his draft stock had just gone up so high, it was almost impossible for him not to do that with a Notre Dame degree in hand, you know, because he would have his Notre Dame degree and, you know, and being that one position group where tread on the tire really matters and coming back does, maybe you lose some value coming back for another year. How about you? Were you surprised with any of them?
Not necessarily, especially after Pete Bavakwa mentioned Amiel Wagner as someone that might be opting out of the Pop-Tarts poll potentially. That sort of, I think, spilled the beans a little bit there.
Maybe he just doesn't like sugar.
Wagner's interesting because I don't know that he's going into the NFL at his like peak, at his college peak, or like at his hottest moment. Somewhat similar to Blake Fisher, someone I think that could probably even increase their draft status with another season in college, but is going in, and it still worked out for Blake Fisher in terms of being a second round draft pick in the NFL. Although I don't think his playing career has gone maybe as successful in the NFL so far as one would hope. But that was the only one to me that I could see another year of college football really benefiting him. But he started a lot of games, played a lot of snaps, stayed healthy through two long football seasons in a row. So certainly earned the opportunity to make this leap. We're still waiting for decisions from some other guys in terms of making their decisions to stay in college or make the leap to the NFL draft. I wanted to go through five guys here and sort of weigh in terms of our confidence on whether or not we think they're coming back or likely to leave. So on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being most likely to return and 5 being most likely to leave, let's share our confidence in the following players. Let's start with Billy Shrouth.
I'm flaking on Billy Shrouth. I would have had him like a 2.5, like a coin flip, and now I'm probably closer to a 4.
Yeah, I'm in the 4 range too, and I've been between a 3 and a 4. I think he's someone he feels to me like someone who sort of fills that role of like, I want to come back and be a leader for Notre Dame and get us over the hump. So I can see him buying into that pitch to come back, but he's also dealt with injuries. Does he want to put himself through that again at the college level? I'm curious like what the draft stock is for him in terms of whether or not people think he's a day two pick. I think he could potentially, he has the talent to be a day two pick. I'm not sure if that's where his stock is right now. That I'd be curious to see what.
The last I saw of Mel Kiper, he had him the 10th interior offensive lineman. So number 10, so a top 10. So that's centers and guards.
Yeah. So, and it's hard to know what that means in terms of draft round.
Right. It's easier to project with a tackle because the tackles go faster.
Right.
Yeah.
The interior linemen are fewer, less to get drafted that high. Unless you're like a Quentin Nelson. All right, next name, Boubacar Traore.
I'm going with a 1 on that. I don't think he's going. I think he has a talent to go. I think he's smart enough to think I could come back and really, really be good. So I would be surprised if he went.
Yeah, I went with a 1 too. A 1 as well, too, making that confusing by saying 2. But yeah, I think he has the talent to put himself into the day one, day two conversation with another strong season next year. And so it makes a lot of sense for him to return. And I think he's most likely to return. Next up, Drake Bowen.
I'm going to say a 2 on him. You know, the linebackers coach opening, I think if Bullhead stayed, you know, maybe he would be all in. With Bola not coming back, but he'd still have the same defensive coordinator. They'd still be in the same defense. I'm going to stay at 2. I'm not going to flake on that.
Yeah, I'm at 2 as well. I think it's something worth pondering for Bowen, but I think it makes sense to return. So I put him at a 2. What about Christian Gray?
I'm going with like a 1.5 on him. I think that, you know, knowing his mom and having talked to her before and just knowing how important like finishing the education pieces to, and he can always come back, but I don't think there's just this pressing thought that Christian Gray needs to go now or his stock will never be as high as it is. I think he's a guy whose stock could get higher with a consistent year. So I think he comes back.
All right. I have Gray as a 2. I think there's just enough reason for him to come back and maybe answer some questions about his game that maybe were raised this past season in a season where I don't think he played at his best. And that would be reason enough to return. And then lastly for our game here, Edon Schuler.
I think Edon really gave it some good thought. And what I'm hearing is it's trending away from him going that he's going to come back. He sees the value of that. And financially, again, if this was 5 years ago, I think Adon is gone. I think with the financial structure that's at Notre Dame and college football elsewhere, I think he comes back. So 1 for him.
Yeah, I had Schuler as a 2 as well. So I feel like Bowen, Gray, Schuler are sort of all in that same boat for me in terms of guys that were thinking about it, but I think are likely to return. Chris W. says, does Charles Jagasa play next year?
Absolutely. I think he plays next year and I think he plays well. And I think he is going to be a starter and it wouldn't surprise me if he was a starting tackle. I think they have to see that. But I think Charles Jagasa is definitely a starter next year. And if you watched our podcast with Mike Golic Jr., Mike thinks Charles Jagasa tomorrow would be the best lineman on the team. And that includes Shrouth and Emil Wagner. So,
yeah. Yeah, obviously he's got to make it to next season healthy. But yeah, I mean, there's extremely high expectation for Charles Jagasa once he gets on the field. I understand people who want to be nervous about that and maybe write him off because of the past two seasons and his injury situations. But I think he is that talented. It's worth getting excited for if he can get out on the field for Notre Dame, because that is a big piece for Notre Dame's offensive line moving forward. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the transfer portal. Six Notre Dame players are currently expected to enter the transfer portal when it opens on January 2nd, and that list will certainly grow. The six who have been reported so far are quarterback Kenny Minchie, quarterback Anthony Rezac, running back Jabron Payne, cornerback Chance Tucker, safety Tabron Benny-Powell, and safety Jadon Blair. Do any of these sting for Notre Dame, Eric?
Well, I mean, Minchie does, because, wow, what a great number two quarterback. You'd love to have him on the team. I don't think the other ones do. I think Jadon Blair could end up being a really, really good player.
Yeah.
And I think he, talent-wise, is really good now. But I don't think he has the drive right now to match that. The drive, let's say, of Ethan Long. And I think that's a big reason why Ethan Long is ahead of Jadon, or was ahead of Jadon. He's way ahead of him now on the depth chart. But I think that's one of the reasons we saw Ethan Long late. You know, I talked to somebody, kind of an insider, about Jadon, and you know, the thought was maybe even flip him over to offense and throw him fade balls. But wherever he goes, he's going to have to put in the work to be great. And he has a lot of the tools to get there. So, you know, hopefully for him that happens at the new school. But I was not surprised by that one at all. I had that on my – when I was calculating – when you asked me the over-under number last week, he was one of the people that I had on my list.
Yeah, I it does hurt, but though it's not surprising, I think it just sort of speaks to the talent that Notre Dame has at the safety position. I mean, look at Tay Johnson and Adon Schuler as the starters there, Luke Talich. And then Ethan Long did what he did in his obviously very limited cameos this year. Jadon Blair didn't necessarily have those moments in his freshman season, but that doesn't necessarily mean a lot moving forward for what his future can be.
And then look what's walking in the door in January.
That's part of it too, I think, at least from my perspective. Like, you got Joey O'Brien coming in, Nick Reddish, Aiden Pouncey is going to start at cornerback probably, but I think he could be a safety. I think Notre Dame is very well off at the safety position right now, and that's how you lose guys like Kennedy Urlacher and Jadon Blair in back-to-back years, because you just have that level of talent, and it's hard to break through on the depth chart, and guys maybe can find shorter paths elsewhere. And so that stings a little bit, not terribly surprising. I think, yeah, Minchie seems probably the most painful, just because you would eliminate any stress about, okay, who's our backup quarterback going to be? I think Jabron Payne can be a productive running back somewhere. It makes sense for him to pursue an opportunity to do that. I'll be interested to see where he lands and tracking how he does, if he can stay healthy. Someone who has played some roles in his Notre Dame career was a Dylan McCullough recruit. So someone that maybe isn't as tied to staying to play for Jawan Sider, not that he has anything wrong with him, but it makes sense that this now would be the time for him to go as a Notre Dame graduate. All right, let's see. What am I doing here? I'm doing all kinds of things. I don't know what I'm doing. Sorry, guys. Pressing buttons.
It's as if I'm running the show. These are the these are the shenanigans that I usually pull, and including, oh crap.
we need to work that. I need to do like a season long highlights or something, and work that oh crap into a highlight reel.
It's too bad I didn't eat the turkey leg on this show.
We'll steal it. That's fine.
Mike Singer made a highlight video. We can play it sometime. It's only 3 minutes.
I don't see any questions that came here while I was talking. So let's get into some of the college football playoffs first round that happened over the weekend. The road teams won in competitive games in the Alabama an Oklahoma matchup and the Miami and Texas A&M matchup. And then very unsurprisingly, Oregon and Ole Miss won in blowouts as expected. What were your takeaways from the weekend, Eric?
I think in looking at those games, Notre Dame belonged. I think Notre Dame would have won either at Oklahoma or Texas A&M. And they would have beaten Alabama or Miami. I think Miami was probably the most impressive of those four teams. And then the blowouts were disappointing, although James Madison put up a lot of points. They were known for their defense, and they had a lot of consolation points, but they still, you know, they still count 30-some is a lot of consolation points against a defense that's supposedly as good as Oregon's. You know, it just felt weird watching the playoff and Notre Dame not being in it. I really tried to watch a lot of the games and try to enjoy it. And I kind of did because I'm an analytical mind. I didn't have a rooting interest. But, man, Notre Dame has to feel good about its kicking situation compared to Miami and Texas A&M. That was crazy. I was at Evil Check when that game was on. I was with Andrew and his brothers when the game started, and it was like 0-0 at halftime, wasn't it? So you go ahead and tell what you thought, because I just thought Notre Dame is better than those teams. I don't necessarily think Ole Miss and Oregon, but the other teams I do.
Yeah, I don't know that I watched much more than a minute of the Ole Miss and Oregon games. I just did. They were so lopsided so quickly that I didn't spend a lot of time watching them. Also, it helped that the Bears were playing on Saturday, so I was locked into the Bears Packers in the evening.
I watched a lot of that game. That was fun.
But I did enjoy watching the Alabama Oklahoma game and the Miami Texas A&M game. Certainly wasn't the prettiest football, and maybe in either of them. It felt like defensive turnovers won the day in both of those games. Miami forcing Reed into three turnovers, two interceptions, one fumble. That's something that you felt like if you were able to beat A&M, it's making Marcel Reed make mistakes, and Miami was able to do that and get through its both teams get through their kicking issues. That was interesting. Apparently Notre Dame isn't the only team in college football with kicker problems, even though Oklahoma, who had the best kicker in college football, had its own kicking issues in the Alabama game. I thought the Alabama game turned on the pick six of Mateer late in the first half, even though like Alabama started to get some momentum, but that felt like, oh man, here we go. Alabama is back in this for real. And certainly, I mean, I think tip your cap to Alabama and Miami for doing what they did in those games, going on the road and winning when people doubted them. I think the outcomes don't necessarily change my perspective that I think Notre Dame is better than them. I think Notre Dame is probably better teams than them right now. But they took advantage of their opportunities. Do you think that people that are outside maybe Notre Dame circles are looking at the results and saying, okay, that the committee was right, Alabama and Miami deserve to be in, or do you think there's skepticism beyond people who watch Notre Dame on a weekly basis?
I think Alabama and Miami fans would say that. From a national commentator perspective, I saw a lot of people tweeting Notre Dame belonged in this playoff. Notre Dame would have done well. Going in, if you take the two group of five teams out of it, I thought the two easiest matchups for Notre Dame, the two most favorable matchups, were Oklahoma and Alabama had they played either of those teams. And they played each other. And even in the game against each other, I think neither of them rushed for more than 60 yards. They had trouble protecting their quarterbacks. I think they would have walked, you know, that would have been not a layup for Notre Dame, but I think that was either one of those teams would have been a victory in Notre Dame. And I think most people saw that. They weren't well played games. You could see people that really know football could see how incomplete Alabama and Oklahoma are. I would be really surprised if Alabama was able to challenge in its next game. Miami is a little bit different. They have elements of their team that are really good. They have two very good defensive ends. They have a right side of their offensive line they can run behind. They have a very experienced quarterback. Their back end of their defense is healthy. And Malachi Toney's really exciting. I mean, they can give some people problems. I don't think that they will win their next game, but they had elements where they were a playoff-worthy team. And they had a really good November. Texas A&M didn't. You know, they really kind of faded right at the end.
We Are Not Marshall said, how did Texas A&M score 41 points on Notre Dame?
Because Notre Dame did not have an answer for Marcel Reed, and they did not have a pass rush at that time. The problem, if you look back at the first two games, yeah, those teams are pretty good. I think if you place them later in the sequence of the schedule, Notre Dame plays much better on defense in both of those games. But at that time, Notre Dame's, I mean, even Purdue was putting up big points against Notre Dame. It was after the Purdue game where Notre Dame really kind of found itself on defense. And they were tested. I mean, they played prolific passing offenses throughout the season, even on crummy teams. Some of those crummy teams were good passing teams. So that is how Texas A&M was able to really give Notre Dame some issues. I mean, Marcel Reed is a really good quarterback, but I think this version of Notre Dame's defense would have held him down.
Yeah, Notre Dame just gave up way too many big plays. Like they were giving up big plays to Miami's receivers seemingly every drive. It was not a good
And I think Notre Dame would have put Leonard Moore on Malachi Toney like they did in the USC game.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. The A&M receivers just took advantage of coverage busts and missed tackles. Like that's Notre Dame's secondary did not play well in that game, and the pass rush wasn't there either. But the secondary gave up big plays. It didn't just give up completions; it was giving up big plays, and that can make all the difference in scoring that many points and being held to fewer points, because A&M was getting the ball and running with it in the secondary against Notre Dame a lot, and that made life difficult for Notre Dame. All right. Let's talk a little bit about recruiting, Eric.
Okay. I guess that's my cue to talk about recruiting. Let's talk about the Teddy Girard reclassification. I know that one's on that list. What do you think about that?
Teddy Girard, he will reclassify from the 2027 class to the 2026 class. That'll allow him to sign with Notre Dame in February and join the team in June. I think it makes sense from Notre Dame's perspective. It increases the competition for the backup quarterback job and then for the 2027 quarterback job, assuming that CJ Carr continues to play at a high level and maybe leads to an opportunity to go to the NFL after next season. I think Notre Dame is recruiting at a point where it can also get another good quarterback in the 2027 class. And I think the way Notre Dame has recruited the quarterback position gives them some confidence in doing that. And with the way CJ Carr is playing, I think there's maybe some guys be like, you know what? I want to go to Notre Dame too. I want to be the next CJ Carr. So I think it makes sense from Notre Dame's perspective. I'm okay with it from Girard's point of view. Generally, I don't want high school guys to wrap up their careers earlier than they need to. But he started for three seasons in high school already. If there's someone that's going to be ready to make that leap, I think it would be someone like Girard. He in his junior season completed 64.9% of his passes for 2,300 yards and 18 touchdowns with 5 interceptions. Rivals ranks him as the number 17 quarterback, number 33 prospect in Georgia, and number 242 overall in the 2026 class. And that's lower than what he was when in the 2027 class. He was the number 5 quarterback and number 75 overall in the 2027 class. So understandable when you move him up a class with guys that have one more year under their belts than he does, that he's not ranked as high, but I think he throws with tremendous touch. He puts the ball where he wants to. I think his highlight films I find fun to watch. I'd encourage people to do that. I did a film study over the weekend if folks want to read that over at blueandgold.com.
Curious, because I asked Tom Lemming this question, so I'm curious your answer to it. Who's of the three young quarterbacks behind CJ Carr, who is the best of them in 2026? Who is the best of those three long term?
2026, I think I personally would go with Hebert. I think, and maybe that's giving too much credence to his athleticism. I like, especially for, I guess, and especially if you're thinking of him as the backup quarterback. Now, I know we think there's maybe a chance that Notre Dame goes in the transfer portal and brings someone else in as the backup. But if you're looking for someone that is inexperienced, yes, and maybe won't have total command of the offense, but if he has the athleticism to maybe make up for that, that gives him the nod from my perspective in terms of looking at those three quarterbacks when you talk about Blake Hebert, Teddy Girard, and then Noah Grubbs, who is obviously the original 2026 quarterback in that class. So that's my thought process on that. I know obviously they're going to learn a lot more about how those guys can handle the offense that I don't necessarily have a sense for. Hebert is definitely the best athlete of those three in terms of being a runner and can make plays with his feet. Not that those other guys can't make throws on the run and do stuff like that, but I think in terms of gaining yards on the ground with their legs, I think Hebert's the best of that group.
What are the top remaining needs in the 2027 class? And how many commitments do they have for people that don't follow it
close? There are 8 commitments. So, yeah, we're at 9, but now back to 8 with Girard moving up to the 2026 class. So, obviously, quarterback becomes a need again in the class. Defensive line, I think, are big needs. Wide receiver position, they have 2 cornerbacks, 2 linebackers already. So those are the positions that they're in the best shape with already. And so there's still plenty of work to do in the 2027 class, but I think they have a pretty good start so far.
And then how does the start of the 2027 class compare to the start of the 2026 class, which was ranked number 2 at the end?
Yeah, so Notre Dame right now has 5 4-star recruits and 3 3-star recruits, according to the Rivals rankings in that 2027 class. If you'd use the Rivals industry rankings, that's 7-1. The long snapper, Sean Kraft, is the only 3-star recruit, according to the Rivals industry rankings, in this 2027 class. Notre Dame didn't get to 8 in the 2026 class until April 5th. So Notre Dame's ahead of schedule in terms of the cycle for getting commitments. I think the quality at the start of this class might be better than it was in the previous class. The start of that class included a handful of guys that ended up being Rivals 3-star recruits: Dylan Faison, Thomas Davis Jr., Noah Grubbs, Sullivan Garvin, Tyler Merrill, who I think a little bit more highly of some of those guys than Rivals does, in my own opinion. But I do think this is a good start, and the kind of start that I think there's a reason to believe that Notre Dame can continue to recruit at the same kind of level that it did in the 2026 class.
Very good.
All right. Let's do one more question from the crowd and then we'll get out of here. We Are Not Marshall said, what does CJ Carr need to work on in the off season? His arm strength downfield was iffy. When the timing was off, he underthrew a ton.
Everything. That would not have been what I would have picked out for him. What I think that Notre Dame will prioritize with him is being a better runner, and not making him part of the running game like Riley Leonard necessarily, but being a better scrambler, being better on short yardage, and being able to be a wrinkle in the running game, not a staple, but a wrinkle. I think that's going to be big. But I mean, he processes so well at the line of scrimmage, and yet there's another level for him. And he is going to get bigger and stronger. I mean, you just look at him from his freshman year to his redshirt freshman year. I mean, he had looked like a bigger, stronger dude, and he's got the frame to get bigger and stronger still, and I think you'll see that in him. But my number one priority, I think, for him is, and also to get and I think he did a good job late in the season of it, getting rid of the no plays, those plays where it makes you gasp, and then we got away with that, you know, where he kind of throws it up at the last second.
So I've been watching the Here Come the Irish series on Peacock. I didn't watch the new episode that came out today, the third episode, but I think it was the second episode, they had the Texas A&M game included in that. And that interception that he threw in that game, you're like, oh, that was such a bad decision. And those weren't the kind of decisions CJ Carr was making at the end of the season. I'm not necessarily concerned with his arm strength, as We Are Not Marshall suggested. I think if the timing is off, that just meant like he wasn't certain of that throw, not more or less than his ability to throw that ball. And so that can lead into the ball being underthrown. I don't think it was a matter of arm strength that resulted in his inability to hit on some of those throws. So I think certainly plenty for him to improve upon and become a better quarterback. I think quarterbacks in general always have room for improvement because there's so many things that go into what they do on a play-to-play basis. But it's certainly an excellent start to his career and a big reason why Notre Dame has impossibly high expectations going into next season. So that'll do it for us tonight on Football Never Sleeps. We appreciate everyone joining us. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Like the video. Go check out blueandgold.com for more information as well. We got 50% off for first-year subscribers. Check that out with the Join Now button or the link in our description below. And everyone, have a Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. I'll let Eric chime in before I let everyone go.
I just want to explain because my granddaughter asked, she goes, why do you say like us? And I said, we're not emotionally needy. It helps the channel. So please hit the like button for my granddaughter. It helps the channel and she'll be happy.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a good week.